Okay. I'm Nathan Abernathy. The date is March 18th, 2010. I'm interviewing Maddie and John Johnson, and we're at Lucy Addison Middle School. First, there's going to be some background questions. Both of you guys can answer this, whatever you're comfortable with. The first question is, when and where were you born?
I was born in Northeast, right here in Roanoke, Virginia, 1943, and I was born at home, not in the hospital.
I was born in Bedford County in 1940, and I also was born at home.
And then the second follow-up question is, how long have you lived in Roanoke, and what streets and neighborhoods have you lived in?
Okay, I'll go first. I come to Roanoke when I was 2 years old. That's when my father went into the service in 1942. I lived with my grandparents at that point in time. We lived on what it's today called Orange Avenue, not far from this school, but that was before it was built. I lived at the corner of 10th Street and Old Lynchburg Road, it was called then, 10th Street and Lynchburg Road. After that, we lived there, I guess, until my father got out of service, which was in 1944, I think he got out of service. At that time, we moved from my grandmother's house. He bought a house under the G.I. Bill, which is not far from here today, in the 800 block of Staunton Avenue. That's when they started to integrate that neighborhood, and that was in 1944. That was something that was very, very unusual, because at that point in time, no black people had moved beyond 10th Street. Northwest. Mm-hmm. See, so everybody lived on this side of Northwest mainly, not the rugby area or not that area. So he bought a home up there, and we had all white neighbors at that point in time. I started school from that neighborhood right up here in Northwest. So that's where I'm from, Northwest neighborhood. I attended Harrison School. That's where I started at, which is now the they're going to move it out, the old Harrison Museum on Harrison Avenue. At that time, that school was, it would go from elementary all the way up to the eighth grade. You'd go to that school all the way up to the eighth grade. And then you'd leave that school and you would go, at that point in time, was old, it was Addison, was what we call the school administration over here now, mm-hmm. which was Booker T. Mm-hmm. And you'd go there from the 9th through the 12th. But that changed. That all changed before I got out of Harrison School. And from there, I stayed at Harrison School all the way up to the 6th grade. And then during that period of time, this high school was built. Addison High School was built in the 50s. And that's when the change, the schools,
okay.
The other schools and stuff like that. I don't want to get too far. But I'm just giving you the schools that I attended, from Harrison School, from the 6th grade, the 7th and 8th grade school was Booker T. Washington Junior High School. That's what they called it in the 50s. And from there, you'd come here, Addison, at that time, Lucy Addison High School, the 9th through the 12th grade, which was your only high school for people of color in Roanoke at that time. That was it.
Okay.
So that's just giving you, basically, as I grew up, and I was in the Northwest neighborhood, and then my wife was.
I was in the Northeast neighborhood. Northeast was a community really independent of the rest of, most of the other sections in Roanoke. It was just a community that had everything, I guess, that we thought we needed. I was raised by my grandparents because my mom died of childbirth. And I lived in Northeast until got married. And First house was back on Staunton Avenue where he lived.
Home place.
The old home place. We moved in the old home place. Stayed there about 10 years?
No, not quite.
About 7, years. 8 years.
Yes, about 7.
And we moved off of Staunton Avenue on Aspen. And we moved on Aspen. We were only blacks there. That was like breaking, you know, getting the neighborhood. And one incident that I remember so well when we moved on Aspen is that the milkman would not leave me milk for my children because he said I wasn't the person who was supposed to be answering in the door. Okay. I'll never forget that. And it took him a little while to realize that we had actually bought the house in the neighborhood. We stayed there about 10 years. Okay. Then we moved where we are now on Vonnet Road. But Northeast, like I say, was an independent place. We had our own barbershops, beauty parlors, grocery stores, shoeshine parlors.
Nightclubs,
that's where the nightclubs were too.
Tourist homes, because there wasn't any hotels except for one.
That's right.
That was Dumas Hotel, which is...
was on Henry
Street. What's they call that now on Henry Street? It's some type of art, a culture. I forget what the name of it is.
Culinary.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a culinary school now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But she also attended Harrison School.
I'm going to say how they did us in Northeast, because Northeast was not the place to live. Northwest was the place that you were supposed to live if you were up echelon, whatever. But anyway, I love this. I had to go to Gilmer School. It was Gilmer School, from Gilmer School to Gainsborough School, from Gainsborough School to Harrison School, from Harrison School to Booker T School, from Booker T to Addison. Where, because he lived in Northwest, he just stayed at, you know, the Harrison School. And what else? And we thought we were living a very, very good life until urban renewal came in, and then they told us how badly we were living. Because we didn't know it. We were living a good life until the city came in and says, no, you're not. You're living this way and you're living that way. But we thought we were doing okay.
Okay. I actually want to ask some questions about that later if we have time. Mm-hmm. We'll skip ahead to some of these more background. What kind of activities did you participate in?
In school?
Growing up in school, neighborhood activities, family, whatnot, church, any kind of activities?
Well, during the time that I was growing up now, of course, I come from a religious background, started out that way. I attended High Street Baptist Church at that time. Reverend Smith was the pastor of that church, and it's Noel Taylor's ex-church today. But I got into the church early. Of course, my mother always had me there anyhow. But and sang on a couple of choirs and stuff like that. That was part of my youth as growing up in the church and then becoming a Cub Scout and a Boy Scout also with High Street Church, within the church there. And basically, you had the Y. I used to be a member of the Y. I even played baseball for the Y and stuff like that. Because this was happening in elementary school. As you got into junior high school, those things, there wasn't that much for junior high school kids to do like that. But we still had some little social life things after school, stuff like that. But most of us had little jobs too. That was the key to everything, because your parents didn't have a lot back then. They didn't have the best of jobs. They didn't have a lot to give you as far as allowances. We didn't even know what allowances was. Allowances for you is when you got out and you hustled some pop bottles, cleaned them up, you sold them, and stuff like that at the end of the week. And then you piled up little junk and stuff, and you sold that. That's the money that you actually made on the side, because your parents just didn't have that money to give you back then. So what you was trying to do basically was get you some money together so you could go to the movies. That was the big thing back in the day, going to the movies. seen the westerns and the chapters that they had in the movies. That was a lot of fun, just getting out. And then, too, we had one of the beautifulest, prettiest parks mm-hmm. that the city I know have ever seen, and that was Washington Park right here. Mm-hmm. It's not much of a park now, like it used to. This was one huge park. It even had a beautiful waterfall. And I know my parents used to bring us over on the holidays. And people would actually come in by busloads and park because they had the Royal Garden over here where the school is today. All of that was a big amusement place like over there where you could go. And then it even gotten better when, as you progressed. And when I hit high school, oh, those were the days. We actually had the little sock hops down here in Washington Park. At the tennis courts, we had them at the Girls' Y, which is the Boys' Y now. That was called the Girls' Y. The Boys' Y was over on Gainsborough. Mm-hmm. Of course, they tore that down. But they had the sock hops all the time on the weekends. You know, and then we would go over to the Royal Garden on the weekends. All this was during the time we was in high school. You know, but like I said, you had jobs too, and you basically that was our entertainment. We had a beautiful pool, swimming pool, and stuff like that. And those were just things to do because it was a lot actually to do, I think, at that point in time than kids have today. It was a lot going on.
Well, my church was the biggest thing that we went to. When we got old enough, they would choose each, you know, different people to teach our Bible school. That was during the summer. We were very fortunate. We had allowances by being raised by our grandparents. No sock hops, it's three girls. No sock hops for us. Only way we could get to the theater is that we had to stay in church all day Sunday, then they would let us go to the movies Saturday. And that was just about it. He was at all the sock hops and the dances and all of that. And my grandfather had the hedges so high you couldn't see over them. I think he cut them down when we were about 14 years old, so somebody could see over them. He saw over them. Sealed the hedges. but that was about it. And, well, for me to make a little extra money, you know, I love to bake, so I would bake cakes for the older women in the neighborhood, and they would pay me for baking cakes or do the hair or something like that. Well, that was about all we did. And my grandfather worked for the N&W because every summer they put tags on us and put us on the N&W train and ship us to his brother's house in Aberdeen, Maryland, and we spent half the summer up there and half the summer here.
And those were good school days. I love school.
Mm-hmm.
I
Me
love
too.
School because, you know, it was not a great big black community because most of your friends that you would see we were all going to school together, the majority of them. You know, especially at high school, on account of that one high school, see, which was Addison, Addison High School. So the school has changed so mm-hmm. much, your high schools, from what it was back then. Because at that point in time, I couldn't wait till I got to Addison High School because I wanted to play football, and I said, we got one of the best bands in the state under Mr. Finley. We did. Addison had one of the best bands in the state. And also, one thing that the high school possessed back during that time was trades. Mm-hmm. Kids do not have that today. Because Addison offered auto mechanics, they offered barbering, they offered electronics, they offered cosmetology, they offered carpentry, barbering. I mean, it was all laid out there. Because I had 2 years of barbering, and a lot of the barbers, most of the barbers that was in Roanoke come through Addison High School. Mm-hmm. And they would go on to get their license, go to Richmond and stuff, to get their license and stuff. And then a lot of mechanics, because that's what I thought one time I wanted to be, was a mechanic. I couldn't get in. It was just crowded. So I went into the carpentry shop with Mr. Johnson. But I had 4 years. I had some type of skill when I did graduate. That I could do, some things that I could do. And I saved myself a lot of money in the long run by doing those things because I not only did I do it here, I also did it in the military. those trades that I learned how to do, the things that I learned how to do in high school. So it wasn't boring. And I don't think kids today enjoy school like we did back then. I don't think they do. They don't offer those things today, unfortunately. And the way the economy is going, I don't think that'll ever happen. I don't foresee it in the future. The only trade school I know maybe that you can get something is this school in Salem.
Arnold Burton.
Yeah. And that's sad because a lot of kids is not going on to college. No, they won't go.
And if they had trade schools, I don't think the dropout rate would be half as high.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
No. If they had it in school, no, it wouldn't be.
Well, that's
something I get from other, we have a thing of other interviews, and they really talk a lot about the way the school has changed.
Yeah.
Just a couple more background. Basically, what kind of work did you and your family do, even transitioning into like adulthood? Like, what did your parents do, and what did you eventually do?
Now, my mother was basically, she was a house mother. She was a housewife. My father, he worked for the Norfolk and Western. That's what it was then, Norfolk and Western Railroad, after he come back from service. In fact, he told me that he worked for the railroad when we lived in Bedford, before he ever went into the military. And he stayed with the Norfolk and Western all the way up until they closed the freight station, and he got laid off. But he worked on radios. He had other skills until he got eventually called back, and eventually he retired from, at that time, was Norfolk and Southern, which it is today, the railroad. My mother did a little work while he was in the service, but not a whole lot of work. She worked at S&W Cafeteria downtown, one of the old cafeterias downtown. And that was basically it until my father, and he was the breadwinner. Because my mother died when I was 10 years old, too, and my grandparents raised me up from then on. But, that was my father. He helped down that job.
My dad was, my father was a chef on the Norfolk and Western trains. And I think his route was here, from here to Ohio.
The Shenandoah Run.
The Shenandoah Run, yeah, Ohio. But we didn't live with our father. We lived with our grandparents. And my grandmama did some domestic work, but my grandfather worked for the N&W for 47 years. That's where he retired from.
So you mentioned being in the military. You were in the service as well?
Yeah, I was in the military. Uh-huh.
Okay, because I knew you mentioned your father was. What was that like? Like being in the military, because I'm not, I don't know what time to serve.
Okay, well, see, back when I graduated from Madison High School, the draft was still in. So a lot of people say, okay, you want to get you the obligation, you got that, you got to get it, you want to get it over with. So I went on into the military. I knew I wasn't going to college because my parents couldn't afford to send me to college. So I joined the military with 13 more fellas. We all went in together from Roanoke, because a big write-up from that they sent back and put in the World News. 13 guys from Roanoke joins the military. See, so we all went to Fort Jackson, South Carolina. You're talking about an experience for a teenager going into the military? That was something else. That was something else. I'll tell you what, being away from home for the first time that long, that taking some getting used to. Because I'd never been away from home a period of time. And then, at that point in time, I mean, when you go to basic training, and I know you know something about the military, the tech, I mean, you had to really grow up fast. You had to grow up fast, you had to become a man real quick. And finally, I wouldn't let it get really next to me, because we had some guys there that I knew and stuff like that, you know. And I just made up my mind at that point in time when they were hollering and screaming and carrying on and stuff like that. And I said, it's a game that they're playing. I just put it in my head that it was a game that they was playing, and I'm not going to let these old men outdo me.
Mm-hmm.
See, because they were tough. It was tough. Those old boys were tough.
There was a lot of racism in the service.
But and you're going to experience that. You experienced that. We experienced it.
Yeah.
During the time I was in, as far as rank and stuff like that was concerned, you still experience it was when, and this was the 60s, you have to remember, this was the 60s when I was in there. And you're going to go through, although the service military was integrated, but you still had racism.
I can imagine so. I was in the military recently. It's not like it was then, but
they've come a long way. Yeah. And so you didn't make anything. You didn't make any money. I started off with about $78 as a recruit a month. Mm-hmm. Three hots and a cot, I said it. And that's it, and they're going to take care of you if something happens to you as far as going to the hospital and your physical means. But I served 3 years in the military. I was in Fort Jackson, South Carolina. I left Fort Jackson, South Carolina. From there, I went to Fort Hood, Texas. I was stationed just a couple of barracks up from where Elvis Presley was when he was in at mm-hmm. Fort Hood, Texas. And from Fort Hood, Texas, went to Fort Dix, New Jersey. From there to Germany. I spent 2 years in Germany, come back from Germany, and I spent 6 months in Fort Lewis, Washington, and three of those months was spent in Alaska. I was up in Alaska there. But I was over during the time when it was, I call it the hot stuff at that point in time. This was before the Berlin Wall were built. Mm-hmm. I was over there during the time when the people was trying to get out of the East and defect to the West because they were trying to get away from under the communist section. And it was an article in the paper here, I guess, about 2 years ago where they said they didn't shoot people.
That's a lie.
They shot people.
Yeah. That's
anybody who was escaping from the East trying to get to the West. There was no wall. It was what they call Constantina wire, nothing but the barbed wire. Those people would get tangled up trying to get out, and they were killing them. They were shooting them. We went up there more than one time because I was married then. I told my wife, I said, if the stuff hit the fans, don't look for me. I'm not coming back home. Mm-hmm. I'll never make it back over here because all hell gonna break loose over here and I won't be back. I was in combat support company. I drove a tank and a personnel carrier. Mm-hmm. And we were out in front of the battle group. We were out in front of everybody because we was the recon. And we was out in front of everybody. But that was an experience too because, like I said, hey, I'm a young man. You know, and then, too, you think about all of that stuff while you're going back home. So I know what the guys are going through today. You know, they're really in the hot stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't get shot at or anything like that, but we were there. That's when President Kennedy extended everybody over there for some extra time during that time when I was over there. They didn't get to go home. They had to stay some few months over. I think it's 2 or 3 months that they did. But I got out in 1963.
What a little bit off the background topic, but what was it like when you came back to Roanoke from that transition?
Well, when I come back to Roanoke, basically a lot of stuff hadn't changed. This is 1963. Mm-hmm. Some things were easing up, some things were changing, but not a lot. Not a lot of stuff had changed when I come back to Roanoke. The job market. See, because now I'm looking for a real job. Come out of high school, I'm into service. I worked some part-time jobs. But I had a good job when I was in high school. I made as much money as some men did, some grown men did back then. When I was in high school, I had a good job. But when I come back, I started looking for jobs, trying to find a really good job that wasn't to be found. So I've saved up some money. My wife saved money for me, put money back. I had money in the bank and stuff like that. And I started to draw some unemployment because I put in applications for the Norfolk and Western, the GE. I went over to Martinsville, DuPont. They said was hiring and stuff like that. It just wasn't a lot of the job market for minorities. It wasn't there. It just wasn't there. The fellow even told me when I went down to the North and Western shops, he told me, he said, they're not going to hire you. When I went through the gate, he told me, he said, you're wasting your time, young man. They're not going to hire you. He said, the last Negro that they had was Joe Sims. Mm-hmm. He said, that's been years ago, and they're not going to hire you. And he was right. He welcomed you in and did the application and stuff, but I never heard from him. I never heard from him. So what I did, I the unemployment office found me a job with S&H Hieronymus as a truck driver. Started me off at $1.25 an hour. I said, well, okay. I mean, I'll work. It didn't make any difference. I got a family. I got a little money saved up, but I need a job also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I went to work for Hieronymus, and I worked there, and I worked my way up a little bit with them. And then the service station that I worked at before I went into the military, the guy down there needed somebody. And I went to work for him. And from there, I went to work. I had a chance to go to work with N&W at that point after a few years. Yeah, this was in 1965.
Mm-hmm.
But I turned that down. I didn't want to go. And then I could have got a good job because at the service station, which was at the corner of Wells Avenue and Jefferson Street, I got to meet a lot of people that works on the vice presidents, even the president of the N&W, because I knew Mr. Fish personally and stuff. And I got to know people, so they offered me some jobs. But the problem I had with the N&W then, they were laying off.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get laid off, you got a family, it was hard.
Mm-hmm.
So I stayed where I was at. And then I got interested in the fire service because I had wanted to be a fireman when I was a kid. I used to love to see those trucks come around. You hear them sirens, man.
Mm-hmm.
You get excited. And this guy, Lawrence Breeding, told me that they was taking applications for the fire department. Well, they'd only hired two up to that point, and that was Joe Crutchfield and Riley Qualls. They were the first blacks to get a job with the fire department in the city of Roanoke. So when he told me about it, then they had two more blacks. I applied for a job with the fire department, city of Roanoke. And they told me where to go and everything to apply and everything. And I did, and I was fortunate. I got a job in 1966 with the Roanoke City Fire Department. I got on. And I stayed there till I retired.
And we made lieutenant, and we made captain, and we made chief.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, I went right on up through the ranks. I started off as a firefighter, and I worked my way on up through the ranks because at that point in time, when I made captain, the city of Roanoke had never had a minority captain in the history of Roanoke. I was the first minority captain.
First one to teach?
I was the first minority to teach, to get a degree for fire science courses in the state of Virginia.
The whole state.
Mm-hmm.
That's impressive.
Yeah. And also one of the first suppression fire chiefs for the city of Roanoke, too. But I worked my way right on up through the ranks, and I stayed there. I worked almost 37 years for the city of Roanoke. And I retired as a battalion fire chief. But that's getting away from the military. But I just give you some on the military, because like I said, when I come back to Roanoke, things hadn't changed that much because I'd only been away for the 3 years from getting out of school and going in the military and then coming back in 63. But things were starting to change. Things started to change around here in about 1964, 65. Things started to change.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of when they started to integrate some of the restaurants downtown, the Woolworths and Cress's.
That was in the late 60s.
Yeah. Later on,
that's
they would start.
Noah Taylor and Holland.
Yeah, Mr. Holland.
Yeah, Noah Taylor and Holland.
And Reverend Wilkerson.
Reverend Wilkerson.
Yeah. They all
very
started.
Very easy.
But,
it was really easy.
Yeah. And then, too, we were recipients of going downtown and seeing the whites drink here, colored drink, the water fountains. See, all of that existed downtown also, you know, and even on through high school that existed. We knew
you could shop, but you couldn't eat.
Yeah, you couldn't sit down and eat.
But you couldn't eat.
And then when they did put a counter in, I think they put a counter in, you didn't have a seat. You could stand up inside of, I think it was
Woolworths,
and eat at the counter. They would serve you at the counter. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, you couldn't. You could shop, like you say, but you couldn't purchase anything. And then, as far as eating, you couldn't get anything to eat. you couldn't even get anything to go. You just couldn't get anything. But, yeah, we experienced a lot of segregation mm-hmm. right here in Roanoke. But then during the transition period, it wasn't bad. Really bad.
Well, the transition was kind of easy.
The schools.
Yeah, sort of scuffles like in the schools.
And stuff like that, you know. But
it wasn't bad at all.
Basically.
But it's nothing like, for example, like Farmville.
No.
Oh, no, no.
Right down the road. Which
right,
was
right.
National.
Prince Edward County.
Yeah.
See, no. It wasn't like that. The only thing that we ever experienced now when Addison used to play ball, because I played football here too, but basketball. I was fortunate enough to have work and get me a couple of cars and stuff like that. Anytime I go down to Petersburg, that's where they had the state championships at Virginia State College in Petersburg and also at Hampton University down there in Hampton. And when Addison would go down, we would drive. We would always get stopped in Appomattox. We'd get stopped in Farmville and Petersburg. I mean, it wasn't a time that we didn't go down there, that they would pull us over and stop us just to check to see if we had driver's license and stuff.
Anything.
And they even say one time, you look like a guy that we stopped not too long ago that didn't have a driver's license. But that was the reason for pulling you over and stopping you.
Yeah,
you know,
just anything to just, harass you.
It, what they're saying was driving while black. You know, we would those little towns would stop you. You know, they didn't even have a traffic light on, but you never broke the speed limit. For God's sakes, don't break the speed limit because you didn't want to go to jail because your parents would never know it. You'd be just missing before anybody ever found out where you were at. You know, so we never did. We creeped on through there. You go on and get stopped and go on. They let you go and then you go on. When you come back, you know, because there wasn't no side road you could take before. Yeah. You had to go through. Go on down 460 and go that way. But those were some days, though. But like I said, Roanoke was a different city at the time. It was all together different, and people got along pretty good in Roanoke, I'd say, you know, basically. And like I said, we had our own little side of the tracks over here, northwest, compared to some minority people lived in southwest, but they lived up in that area of Norfolk Avenue, Richards Avenue, Roy Avenue, and Salem Avenue. It was just that small black section over there at that point in time. But Northeast, like I said, they start to change the landscape down there because redevelopment, the housing authority, they come through. And this was, what, in the 60s when they started to buy up all of the property in Northeast?
They didn't buy it, they stole it.
They bought it. They just give you what they wanted to give you for, not the value of it, but... That's when everybody, basically, the neighborhoods in Northeast were gone. They pushed everybody out of Northeast to Northwest or Southwest. And your old neighborhood down there vanished except for the small little sections of Gilmer Avenue, Patton Avenue, and later on Wells Avenue. Some of that on this side of Jefferson Street, which now is still Northeast. You know, and that's your only little neighborhoods. Is where Ms. Bethel and that little group that heads up the Gainsburg
neighborhood.
She lives on Patton Avenue Northeast. But basically, that's all your neighborhood of Northeast anymore. And the black neighborhood, what we call the old black neighborhood, is Patton Avenue and Gilmer Avenue.
That's actually a question I wanted to specifically ask about the urban renewal. Is how did that change the way the black community functioned? Because I know, you know, growing up in Roanoke, I've always heard there's all this stuff where the Civic Center used to be, but you don't really see a lot of pictures of it. You don't hear much about it. And until real recently, urban renewal was kind of sold as this really nice thing in Roanoke until, you know, it started coming out in the paper and everything. But I think it was back in the 90s when you started hearing a lot more negative stuff.
What really happened,
yeah.
They just came through. I think the basic was they didn't like the looks of Northeast from the interstate, the highway, tourism. You know, because you come through Northeast, you go straight downtown. With the little old bridge, you were downtown. And urban renewal was just an idea, somebody's idea, that we'll get rid of this and we're going to put up a civic center and we're going to have this and we're going to have that. And it destroyed a lot of families. It destroyed a real close, tight neighborhood. The money that they offered people for their homes, I don't know how in the world they expect them to buy another house, especially when you had to go to Northwest. You know, there was not enough. Majority of them went to the projects.
Mm-hmm.
Majority of the people who lived in Northeast who owned their homes had to go to the projects because they could not afford another home. We were just fortunate. My parents, like I said, they both worked. So they could afford, you know, to buy another house. And it's just such a big difference. And we all still were together because we still were going to the same churches. We were still going to the same stores. But that closeness, you know.
I got a different spin on it myself. I think what really would have been great had they would have given people a fair price for their properties. That would have made a big difference. Because what they really did, they did get rid of a whole lot of old properties. Because those homes down there, God, I don't know when they were built. You know. So they were going from a real old neighborhood into a newer neighborhood where they had new homes, better homes and stuff like that. And they just didn't give the people enough money to where it was almost a turnkey.
Mm-hmm.
See, some people down there didn't get but $2,000 and $3,000 for their property. Then they would get a $5,000 government grant to move to Northwest. That would give them about $7,000. That still wasn't a turnkey because now you've got to go in debt. And these people, a lot of them were older people and retired people.
Yeah.
They mm-hmm. thought their homes was paid for. They would live here the rest of their lives and stuff like that. That's what hurt. That didn't happen. So when they made the big push through and they got the people out of Northeast and stuff like that, just give them a fair price. I think the people would have loved it because I think a lot of them say, okay, we're going to be moving basically along with a lot of other people in certain neighborhoods because a lot of people then, they did. They moved up Northwest. Where did they move? They moved Lafayette Boulevard, Delaware, Massachusetts, all of those streets in there, in that little area right there near High Street. Basically, the black people just moved in that area. And that's where they settled. And that's where a lot of them is today that haven't died out, that come out of Northeast. All up and down Orange Avenue, up and down Staunton Avenue, Hanover, all in this area further up. That's the reason I said I had a spin on. I think it was good for a lot of families. It was good.
He didn't live in Northeast.
Well, I visited Northeast, you know, and sometimes urban renewal is great stuff.
Well,
it's great things because now you are moving on up, as the Jeffersons said, we're moving on up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And they did, but they had lovely neighborhoods. They had nice neighborhoods. It was just that the old homes and stuff like that, either you fixed them up, you didn't get no grants back then that you could go and get a grant or apply for grants to fix your homes up. It was either you go to the banks, and no, that wasn't happening. You wasn't getting no money like that,
mm-hmm.
you know, to go and say, okay, I'd like to take out a loan, although you had a job, so I could borrow money to fix my house up. That just didn't happen back then. You know, so you had to struggle, and you had to fix it up the best you could back then. So there wasn't no new homes being built. Not in Northeast.
Mm-mm.
You fix up what little bit you have. But in Northwest, there was new homes being built. See, and then if you were fortunate enough, had enough money, you could purchase them because you were going into an area where new homes had been built. And there's some not too far from here that they built up northwest, homes back during the time of renovation in northeast. But then, too, it wiped out a lot of black culture, too. Because, like I said, you had stores down there. Some black people run some stores down there, but mostly they were Syrians. But you had stores on every corner. I mean, you had to leave her house, and you had a store right here. She could walk. She could throw a rock. Store right here, you could throw a rock. Store right here, mm-hmm. walk up a block, there's a store right here. There were three stores within a block and a half. Everybody trying to vie for that business, you know.
And Northeast was also mixed. We had white families living yeah. in Northeast, mm-hmm. where majority, where the Northwest, it wasn't. You had all white in Northwest until integration, you know, but down in Northeast, when it was segregated, they live right beside us, all around us. Everybody lived together. The only separation that we had with some of the kids that I grew up with was when we went to schools. We went to different schools. Mm-hmm. Come back from school, they at my house, cooking, my mama, all together. It was a mixed neighborhood.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just that basically then white people could live where they wanted to live.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We couldn't live where we wanted to go. You know, we know where we could live and where we couldn't, you know. Because you're not going to get a house, or you're not going to buy a house in that neighborhood. But, you did have some mm-hmm. white families living right there near black families mm-hmm. back then, during the 50s. And, well, in the 40s,
too.
The
40s too. And the 50s, yeah, 40s and the 50s.
Yeah. Because, like I said, when we moved up here, it was in the 40s up here on Staunton yeah. Avenue.
But, and that was all white.
Well, it was, yeah. And then a big... That's where the Reverend moved, and another Reverend, and some of the people that could move to Northwest mm-hmm. started moving up there. The ones who could afford to buy those homes, mm-hmm. you know.
And after I decided I needed a job, I went to the Virginia Employment and took the test for LPN and made a pretty high score on it. And they asked me to go into surgery, so I went into surgery as a surgical nurse, and I think it was the second black surgical nurse at Ronald Memorial Hospital. Worked there until it got on my nerves. Because one thing he always tell me, well, you can come home. Yeah, I can come home, all right. And then I took a couple of courses, and I taught at Fallon Park School. That was the first open space school in the state of Virginia. You could stand in the first grade and look all the way through to the sixth grade. You know, no walls, no mm-hmm. nothing, you know. And it was crazy as hell. Nobody could survive it. So when I left there, I went to the library, started working at the library, and I retired. I was managing Jackson Park Library. That's what surprised Miss Sale. She says, when I'm down here at the Roanoke Library, I said, you are. She said, do you know where it is? I said, I worked there for 10 years. She's old. Yeah.
But in the Gainesville area, it was like almost like Henry Street back during the 40s and the 50s. Mm-hmm. Like that. You had all of your shops, a lot of them was right there in Gainesville, because your funeral home mm-hmm. even had a dry cleaning, grocery stores. Like I said, mm-hmm. you had stores everywhere.
Restaurants.
And you had restaurants, and then Henry Street had your nightclubs and everything. So basically everywhere that black people went was right in that area, from Henry Street right across Gainesville mm-hmm. and right on across Gainesville over to Royal Garden. And if you wanted to find someone, that's where you would find them. And even people that lived out of town, let's say that you lived in Vinton, Salem, or even as far as Bedford, mm-hmm. Lynchburg.
Marcusville.
Yeah. Those people would come to Roanoke. And that's where you'd meet a lot of people from out of town. And all the entertainers. That's what I used to love, to come up on Henry Street as a kid. When the guys would come from out of town, and this was back, even it goes back as far. I got to see Ray Charles one time when he come to Roanoke. Little Richard, I'll never forget when he debuted with Tutti Frutti. He come to, they had to stay at Dumas Hotel. Mm-hmm. So we knew we was going to get to see him. When the bus would pull in, we'd get to see him. James Brown, all the old entertainers, they would come right to Dumas Hotel on Henry Street. Although at that point in time, Roanoke had the American Legion Auditorium until it burnt down. And that's where they would entertain at. Mm-hmm. And it was so crazy when they would bring the black entertainers to Roanoke, then the white people had to go up in the balcony. They couldn't dance on the floor with black people. But now, some of the white people would come down and get right on the dance floor. Because there wasn't nowhere to dance upstairs in the old American Legion Auditorium. There wasn't some bleachers up there. See, seats up there, theater-style seats up there, where they could look and hear the entertainment. See, but they would come down. And this was during the 50s, too. They'd actually bring what they'd call a top 10 review here. And that was something to see back then, especially as for... and they don't have that entertainment here anymore. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Not at all.
No entertainment like that. If you get to see some of the older people that... I mean, they're older today. They come to Roanoke at the Civic Center or something there, but not in the prime like it used to be. Because you did get to see black entertainment in its prime back then. And it was just something to see. And then when we finally got a little bit older, we were teenagers, and we'd come up and unload the bus for these guys, and they would let us come in. We wanted to age, and we'd get to go into the dance set and stand around and listen to them and see them. That was something to see and meet them, you know. Because I remember when the Supremes, Dinah Ross and the Supremes, they played Roanoke. A lot of people don't even know that they come to Roanoke. Smokey Robinson.
Sure did. All of them.
They come to Roanoke when they were just starting out right here in Roanoke. And Jackie Wilson.
Oh, yeah.
And he was here.
Lord Price.
Yeah. All of those entertainers were here.
Ian
it was
Chandler.
Something.
Yeah.
It was something to see back in the day. Yeah.
See. We've covered most of the stuff I wanted to ask. Anything else that you guys could add? Because this has been about 50 minutes. It's almost an hour.
I tell you what. One of the things. This was in the 70s, and I didn't know how this was going to set, because you know they tried to keep, and they kept Addison open, although it went to junior high school. But when they closed the doors in 1973, you know, I said, oh, you know, it's probably going to be a big stink, because that's the only high school that minorities ever had, you know, as long as I've known, and as long as Roanoke existed. This was your only black high school, you know, and everybody was coming through here at one time. If you was a person of color and you lived in Roanoke, this was it, you know. And if this wasn't an historical landmark, then there is none, you know, in the city of Roanoke, as Lucy Addison High School was, you know, because from here, even after people left this city and left this state, you know, they had come through this high school if they was here in the city of Roanoke.
The only stink that was really raised is when the city decided they were going to turn Addison School into a school for pregnant girls. All hell broke loose, and I was one of them to help them break it. Miss Addison was not a pregnant girl, but that went away. You know, that went away, and that was in 73.
That was 73?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They wanted to change the school up here.
Yeah.
And then at one time they thought about just shutting it down.
Completely.
Mm-hmm. And of course my wife and I guess you've heard of the big school reunion,
Addison
reunion. And of course she chairs it, and I'm the business manager for that big reunion, which is coming up this year, this August. We're going to have that in the first weekend of August. And this is for everybody who ever attended Lucy Addison High School. dating from 1929 all the way up to the closing of 1973. Mm. So we still try to keep it alive. We don't never want it to go away, you know, as far as Addison High School is concerned. That's when she was talking about some of the old trophies. God, that trophy case wouldn't hold nearly the trophies.
No,
you know,
wouldn't.
That the...
athletic teams.
Yeah, well, the kids that went to Addison, the athletes obtained here, you know, because it was a lot of trophies in that case during the time that I was here, because I helped put some there myself. But I thought it was going to be a big stink after that, but it wasn't. Mm-hmm. It fooled me. It wasn't.
And for the reunion, we have people that lives in Hawaii or Germany, and they come back for this reunion.
Yeah.
And we have two or three people that were graduates in 1929.
Wow.
And they're always there, I guess.
Yeah. It's a couple of educators. Uh-huh. Mrs. Beal, she still lives here.
Yeah.
She was a graduate, and it's another fella.
Mr. Forward.
Yeah, the first graduating class, 1929, mm-hmm. of Lucy Addison High School.
And wow. They come back.
They're still around. Still living.
Mm-hmm.
But this school had a lot of history. The neighborhood had a lot of history, mm-hmm. Back then, because it was it was a lot of black businesses.
Mm-hmm.
That went away. That was one of the things that went away
when
integration.
When
integration started, a lot of your black businesses went away.
It
folded away because you had your black hospital up here, which is Burrell Hospital.
Pharmacy.
And your pharmacies. Yeah, we had two neighbors' pharmacies, Brooks pharmacies. Mm-hmm. You had two pharmacies for blacks. You had your doctors, which the Claytors.
And Dennis.
Penn, and I forget the other doctors. But all of your medical people, your surgeons, and everything, mm-hmm. they were black.
Mm-hmm.
So this was it, this area here from Gainesburg and up and everything. That was it. But after integration, pretty soon, Ronald Moore's taking over Burrell Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
All of your old money, I call it old money, that was your lawyers, your doctors, your dentists, and your reverends, and that started to disappear. And then your black businesses that existed, your cleaners, and the only thing that really survived some of it was your funeral homes.
Mm-hmm.
They're still around today, some of your funeral homes. Hamlin Curtis is one of the original, but some of the older ones like Clark, Hughes, mm-hmm. Williams, Pfizer's, they all went by the wayside. Not that people started to go to white funeral homes. You know, I guess people didn't pass as much. They didn't need those many funeral homes because they all survived. They stayed in business for a long time. But after integration, they started to fade. And that's one of the things that killed Dumas. Because
mm-hmm.
after people could go to better hotels and stuff like that, they started to take advantage of it. And then the nightclubs went away because mm-hmm. people now, integration, we can go across the tracks.
Anywhere we wanted to.
We can go to different entertainments, you know, different clubs, nightclubs. The hotels is often the lounges and stuff like that. So it really, it opened up some doors too, but you know how people a lot of times are, especially minorities, they were comfortable in that comfort mm-hmm. zone, their neighborhood. See, when you go out of that comfort zone, you don't know what to expect,
mm-hmm.
you know, but you're branching out now, you know, unless you had been up north, you know, and then like I was in Germany, there's no segregation.
Mm-hmm.
Germany is all integrated. But for some reason, the military personnel wanted to go over and segregate parts of Germany,
yeah.
you know, and we wasn't having it. We said, no, because they had it to where the minorities would go here at certain clubs downtown in Germany, and then, like it was in Frankfurt, then the whites were going to this town. They didn't want you coming over there. We said, no. Germany is integrated. There's no segregation. This isn't in the States. We're not in back in Virginia or some of the states back home. We're now over in a country that's integrated, you know. And it was good because the German people accepted you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I never experienced any racism in Germany during the time that I was there. It was beautiful. I used to tell my wife, I said, if you ever go back to Europe anywhere, I'm going back to Germany because Germany was a wonderful place. I love Germany over there. You was always welcome. Those people over there treated you with open arms, especially the little towns that you would go into. It was so funny that they'd never seen black soldiers before in some of those towns over there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would walk up to you, and I didn't speak none of some little broke down Dutch. I couldn't really speak the language, you know, and trying to ask them, you know, they even wanted to touch you, to see if you was really real, because you were a person of color that just
see
hadn't seen it before.
Off.
No, they just wanted to touch you. The same way when we went to, people would look at you so funny up in Austria. When we go up there, we say go to Austria for the Lionheart, and the people would look at you, you know, and I guess it was some African people had been there before, maybe, but there were certain parts you go in, they just never had seen people of color.
Mm-hmm.
And most well, it's not like that today, but it was, to me, it was an experience. Of course, the military was an experience for me anyhow. You know, but I met a lot of people in the military, a lot of friends and stuff, and I didn't go as high as I thought I could go, but that wasn't going to happen. I finally realized that, you know, you ain't going to go but so far in the military, mm-hmm. because basically they'd give you rank if they wanted to, and if they didn't, because your superiors mostly were white.
Mm-hmm.
Southern whites.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't leave that out.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep, call you young studs. Come here, boy, young studs. It was to me, I had to laugh at a lot of stuff. I didn't say anything. I just laughed to myself because to me it was comical. You know, I said, because we all in this thing together.
Mm-hmm.
We never know when the stuff is going to hit the fan.
Mm-hmm.
You might need me, I might need you. We just don't know. I might have to pull you out of a hole or do something for you. So we're all in this thing together. We bleed. Red blood, you know. So I would just laugh at a lot of stuff and just go on. And I worked my way through it. I got through a whole lot of stuff like that. And I never paid attention to name calling and all that old crap.
Because
mm-hmm. if you did, you was going to get in a lot of trouble with that stuff. Because, I mean, back then, they didn't mind locking you up and putting you in jail.
Uh-huh.
See? And when people tell you to get off the streets, you got off the streets.
Mm-hmm.
That was basically it. That or go to jail, and you didn't want to do that. And that was going on right here in Ronald, you know. And that was, they used to say the thing about blacks running. That's the reason blacks ran. I did the same thing. We didn't do nothing. We hadn't did nothing, and we don't know why we're running. But yes, we did know why we were running. Because if they locked us up and said, okay, we're locking them up for this or that, and you said, no, I didn't do that. Yes, you did.
Didn't
make any difference. They'd whip your tail, and you're going to jail. So that's the reason blacks would run. See the police car, ain't did nothing. Well, why were you running? I don't want to go to jail because I fear that I was going to go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't have to do anything, but I'm running in here just to make sure that I'm not locked up and you fabricate some stuff. But yeah, we do that as teenagers growing up and stuff like that. You know, and we'd be out late and stuff like that. And they had curfews. We had a curfew. So you didn't want to go to jail because you didn't want your parents to have to come downtown. Oh, no.
Oh, Lord, no.
Oh, you just tell the man, say, look, keep me in jail overnight. Just lie. I don't want to go home. Because your parents, they didn't spare a rod. Oh, and I think that happened. That's what happened. You know, of course, it's child abuse today. But when I was coming up and she was coming up, there was no child abuse. And I think kids turned out a hell of a lot better. I know I did.
We all did.
Because I feared that rod. I did not want to get no whippings, and I got my share of them, because at least a little thing that you would do back then you get a whipping for it.
Mm-hmm.
They'd bring you in and they'd whip you and
tell
you a whipping.
I feared my mama's eyes.
Well, my mama had to look, too. I mean, we could be somewhere.
Don't embarrass me. Don't you ever embarrass me. Don't you ever bring home anything lower than a... Well, it was A, B's then. B, don't bring... C, you tell the principal to kill you. You know, principal, teachers, mom, everybody went to the same church together. They knew each other. They ate together. Then, what could you do?
Yeah.
What could you do?
Yeah. And see, a lot of our school teachers back then, some of them, the people who lived in Rome, they taught their parents.
Sure.
They taught their parents. They said, I know your father. I know your mother because I taught them.
Don't let me have to go to your mama's house.
Yeah. And you didn't want them to call your parents.
And don't call my parents.
Because the parents would come to school and beat you right here. They beat you in the schools. We're the junior high school. And I know Mr. Saunders beat Buck Good over there that day. Yeah. His daddy comes to school. And I tell you, now, you got to live with that. Because the kids are not going to let you live it down. You got to live with that. And I just hope and pray. I never got into nothing. But my parents had to come to school. I didn't get it. No.
And
bad enough when they sent a note home. See, and you were scared to do anything with it, but take it. I mean, it was something else. But I said, it all turned out good. Kids just don't have to go through that today. And I think if more parents would really step up to the plate, you know, and discipline their children and everything, then we wouldn't have to build a whole lot of new jails, as Virginia did here back about 5 years ago. That's a
Build more jails.
kids just didn't get into trouble like they do back then. Of course, drugs and all of that stuff. They didn't have access to all of that stuff.
Right.
There wasn't any drugs around. Probably up north or some places like that. But around this area, no. Alcohol, a little alcohol here and there. But not
school knob wine. That's what we used to run and get.
kids drank that.
Yeah, school knob wine.
Kids drank a little wine here now, but you dare go home with it on your breath.
No.
Or you didn't get messed up out there because you still had to answer to your parents. Yeah, you still had to be accountable to your parents. Yeah, but those were some good days. Those were some good days. And of course, we come up together because I met my wife when she was in elementary school.
Oh, yeah?
We've been married 50 years.
Wow.
Yeah, she was going to Gilman, and I was going to Harrison School, and we met. Back in the way, way back. Yeah.
You ready to feed me?
Yes. Well, okay. It's been nice. Look,
thanks a lot.
It's been great.
Yeah, and if I can make it to the one that she spoke of in
April.
And maybe we'll try and...
that would be nice to
make it, because I say it's a lot of stuff, God, that went on back there and I've forgotten about.
And everybody have a lot of different experiences.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Different, very different experiences.
Yeah, because it was so tempting back then when you had a car, you know, you want to leave school, you know, and you just couldn't up and leave like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had to slip off.
And the principal slipped right behind you.
That was Mr. Phillips. I tell you what, we had a principal, golly, he was one tough cookie. Mr. Edward Phillips, he was a principal here for years until he retired.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't mind coming after you. All somebody had to say, Mr. Phillips, say, it's a few guys down there in the basketball court. I think they belong in school. He'd get Mr. Coleman. And he didn't take the car. He would ease around and sneak around. And then he'd come down that hill just to run. And he knew you. He said, you, I know who you are. I know who you are. When you come back to school, you're going home. He knew people by names.
And he knew your parents.
Yeah, because he'd roam the halls. He'd see you out in the halls and stuff like that. And Mr. Phillips didn't mind sending you home. He'd put you out of school in a heartbeat. He said, leave, don't come back after Easter. He'd do stuff like that. He was funny. He was sort of a short, bald-headed fellow. But he had one of those commanding voices, you know. He said, hey, son, I mean, he talked to you. Everybody look around, you. He'd say, you, come in. But those were the days. Those were some good days in high school. I liked high school. I liked it a lot. You know, it was something to look forward to doing when you come to school.
It was.
You know, because these teachers, they didn't play either. You didn't cut up, you didn't act up. You mess up, you out the door. Out. And you got up and you exited that door. Because some of them you could get away with a little bit of talk or buzz or something when your back was turned or something. But don't let them catch you. But some of them, you didn't do nothing for what they told you to do. In those classrooms, they were tough.
And their motto was... I've got mine.
Yeah, which was wrong. Yeah, I've got mine, you've got yours. To get there, you can learn it. You're not going to waste my time and your time. And see, you ain't going to go home and tell your parents that you told the teacher, I don't care. Or whatever. That just didn't happen. And then, too, that's the reason I think, like you said, the graduating rate was really high.
It was.
And it's a shame when they tell you that half the kids are not graduating from school anymore. You know, and back then it was nothing to do. If you didn't, if you wasn't in school, where were you hanging out at?
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't the burger joints. There wasn't places that you could go. You was out there just somewhere sitting by yourself. There was no malls.
There was no malls.
There was nothing for them to do but go to the parks or something, hang around, shoot some bat or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
See, and everybody else is in school. So kids, I think they really tried. They made an effort to stay in school. They did the best they could back then.
Yeah.
Wasn't a lot of dropouts. There wasn't a lot of pregnancies either in school. You know, because girls, no, they wouldn't go do nothing like that. Because you got your parents to answer to see. And then, too, if you was the guy that got their daughter pregnant, you had to answer to the dad. You didn't want that on your hands. So, no, you didn't do no stuff. You didn't mess up. You kept yourself pretty straight in those days. But those were some good days.
Well, thank you for the
information.
Okay.
Hopefully some of it was helpful.
Oh.